Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. It is 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday, January 21st, 2014. Wow, have we got a show tonight. You know, every single show, I go back and I do research, reviewing, of course, my own personal experiences as a doctor, melding that with what I observed at the time, what I was told at the time, and new findings. And today's show is really phenomenal. Now, I got through researching. I knew a lot more than what I before I started. I thought I was going to come on tonight and tell you guys that Lyme disease was a hoax. Nope, not so. Lyme disease is a plague and a hoax, both. So it's really, really, it's phenomenal. So hang on to your seats. Definitely buckle up. First of all, I just want to tell you my unique perspective. Many of you probably already know that I'm 56 years old. Well, so what? Well, being 56 years old and having trained and practiced as a physician, it put me right there, square in the middle of the epidemic as it unfolded. And so I have a unique perspective of actually being there. As an ambitious pre-med student, I was actually sitting in the lecture hall at the Harvard Medical School as an esteemed researcher was revealing the discovery of Lyme as the true cause of childhood arthritis and how it could be easily cured with antibiotics. And I was there in medical school as the hepatitis B vaccine was being given and rolled out. I even took a dose or two myself as I graduated in 1983. And I was there on location in Wisconsin, dear tick capital of the world. As I implemented the tick response programs, I was right there on the ground. And then in Syracuse, New York, as patient after patient came in to me with these mysterious illness and symptoms. So today, I'm going to piece it all together for you. And at the end of today's show, you will have no doubt about the cause of Lyme and what you can do to prevent it or even reverse it. So let me tell you what prompted this show. I got an email from Carol. This is what Carol said. Carol said, how is it that with a Lyme test, a positive test can be negative, and a negative can be positive? A couple of years ago, I was positive. After 1.5 years on antibiotics and no end in sight, I gave up. Fast forward over 2 years, I now believe that all I had was a serious case of candida, and still do. Why the hoax of Lyme disease? Why can't doctors see these so-called diseases for what they really are? Carol, frustrated with candida, frustrated with Lyme testing. All right, so we can see Carol is just about done now. She has had it. So when I got that email, I said, you know what? It's time to speak out. It's time to at least share what I know and help people make a meaningful progress with this condition. First of all, what is a Lyme test? What is it? Well, the Lyme test is an antibody test. And an antibody is just what it suggests. It's against some type of body, in this case an organism or a disease or an infectious agent. So an antibody is not the agent itself. So if you detect an antibody, it does not mean that the organism is there or was ever there. So all Lyme tests are antibody tests. And so the test can never be evidence of disease. So I'm going to break this down for you a lot more, because for a lot of you, it's like, I've been getting these tests, I have these antibody tests, So let me explain this to you in street English. We're going to leave all the medical terms behind here. Okay, so let's say there's a bad guy. He's done bad things, that's why I call him a bad guy. And you take a plaster cast of his face. You then take the plaster cast and you shatter it. It's now in many pieces. And you pick up a piece and you decide that you're going to use the impression of that one piece as an identifying tool. And whenever you find a human being whose face fits into that impression in any kind of way, shape, or form, then you will know that person is a bad guy. And you will know this is evidence of criminal behavior and a crime, and the person should be incarcerated. That is an antibody test. So it's not an evidence of the villain. The villain is long gone or was never there. But in any case, when you find someone who has a portion of their face that seems to fit the impression on that selected piece of clay, where you got the impression from the villain's face, then that person must also be a villain. And, furthermore, must also have committed a crime. So if you would submit to that kind of test as criminal evidence, then the antibody test, of course, makes as much sense, too. Now, as you can imagine, there are a lot of people who might be very dangerous villains and commit awful, awful crimes, but may not match that little impression of that select piece of clay from that select piece of the villain's face. And as you might guess, there are a lot of innocent people who are harmless, maybe even law-abiding citizens, who would be diagnosed as being criminals with this particular methodology. This is what an antibody test is. The decision is made that a certain fragment of protein, so a certain fragment, or what is believed to be a part of the villainous organism, in this case a spirochete, and this fragment is mixed. Well, first of all, it's reproduced, so you get lots of these fragments, right? It's mixed with the serum of a patient. If the patient has enough stuff in his blood that sticks to this protein fragment, it is presumed that the patient's body has been exposed not only to such a protein, but to the actual whole organism itself. It's like clipping your fingernail and making an impression of the fingernail clipping and saying, okay, anyone who has a fingernail clipping that might possibly fit part of this impression is also me. Well, it's absurd. But that's what it's done. So antibodies, by the way, fight disease. What if the patient's body was successful at fighting the disease and the person is healthy? Well, the antibody test will show falsely that the person is still infected. And what if the antibody was made in response to a similar but not identical illness? Again, another false positive. And, heaven forbid, what if the villainous, dangerous, deadly, infectious organism, say a spirochete, is really present or was really present, but the protein sequence selected by the investigators is not the same protein sequence that your body chose to make antibodies against? Oops, a false negative. So let's see how accurate this Lyme test is really. Well, more than 3.4 million Lyme tests are performed each year in the United States. These tests are FDA-approved methods that attempt to identify the disease by looking, as we mentioned, in patients' blood for antibodies. And we've covered what an antibody is. So an antibody is not the infectious organism itself. It's very important to understand. Now, we have other reference diseases. For example, if you have syphilis, they take your blood, put it under the black field microscope, and they see the actual spirochete organism going swirl, 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 twirl, twirl, twirl. Aha! There is the organism. This person has syphilis. There's gonorrhea. If you have gonorrhea, they take a sample of whatever fluid and they put it in a culture disc, and guess what that gonorrhea does? It eats the culture medium, it has babies and more babies, and boom, you can grow out in the plate gonorrhea. Let's take another common disease, gout. If the doctor thinks you have gout, the doctor gets a sample of the fluid from your joint, puts it under the microscope, and he can see those gout crystals sticking out of your cell, stabbing them, causing them to break open and cause your serious pain. So in these cases, there's a positive identification of the offending, irritating, causative agent. In an antibody test, there is never any such identification. The causative agent has nothing to do with the test. So you do not need the causative agent in your body for the test to show up positive. And the test does not attempt to measure the putative miscreant, in this case, Bordetella borderfree organism, or the spirochete. So ELISA and Western blot test, sound familiar? They're used a lot for a lot of different diseases. So again, no detection of the infectious agent. No, only an antibody that cross-reacts with Lyme will cause a test to come. So you could have syphilis, you could have glandular fever, or rheumatoid arthritis. So the 70% false negative rate. Now, the accuracy of the test is so poor that the Journal of the American Academy of Family Practice, I get all my information, standard sources, says patients with no symptoms should not be tested for Lyme disease because of the high false positive rate. Wait a minute, hold on, back up. Let's get on our thinking cap here. If there's a high false positive rate, in other words, anyone you test could turn up positive, well, isn't it also going to be falsely positive in people who have symptoms? Of course it is. So let's take a look at this accuracy chart. This is actually published in the American Academy of Family Practice. Their number's not mine. So what they're saying is the Lyme test detects 59% of all disease, but 7% of all who take it will be false positive. And detects, okay, so 1 in 1,000 people actually have the illness. And this for Lyme is pretty close. Actually, now it's now as frequent as 1 in 150, which is a little higher than it was, but still less than 1%. So based on insurance claims, 1 out of a million people tested, or based on insurance claims is how they got this incidence. But depending on who you ask about Lyme, the incidence varies quite a bit. But let's go with the 1 in 1,000. So out of a million people tested, 70,000, that's 7%, 70,000 are going to have a false positive test. 590 are going to have the disease and have a positive test. So you got to, you know, but wait, 590 are going to have a it's going to be true positive. So another test, this is another Lyme test. If you give it to a million people, you're going to have 950 true positives, 190,000 false positives, and 1 in 200 people treated actually have the disease. In other words, for every 200 people you treat based on these positive results, these false positives and true positives, only one will actually have the disease. So if you had a light switch in your house, and you had to flip that light switch on 200 times before the light went on, you would probably come reluctantly to the conclusion that that light switch and that light going on are probably unrelated. And you should come to the same conclusion about the Lyme test. This is the top-of-the-line Lyme test approved by the government. And so this is absolutely atrocious. So we've established that the Lyme test is useless. So how is Lyme disease spread? Let's take a look at that. Well, we're told that Lyme disease is spread by a deer who has a deer tick. The deer tick has a spirochete. When the deer tick bites a person, the spirochete goes into the person and causes Lyme disease. Okay, so far, sounds good. But what if so if you have a person with Lyme disease, you got to have a few things here. First of all, you got to have a Lyme spirochete, you got to have a deer tick, and you got to have a deer. So you cannot have a person getting Lyme disease in a circumstance where there's no deer or there's no deer tick. For example, we now have people diagnosed positive for Lyme in every state in the United States. Well, many states in the U.S. just don't have any deer tick. They don't have any deer tick. So there's no evidence that, or I should say there's a lot of evidence, that people are getting Lyme without being exposed to the deer tick, hence without being exposed to the Lyme organism. So if we go with conscious postulates, they're not being satisfied here. So we can see already that the evidence is that the Lyme organism does not appear to be associated in any meaningful way with Lyme disease, that's number one. And number two, the Lyme test is not associated in any meaningful way with the symptoms of or the disease called Lyme. Now, once you realize those two things, it's easy to understand why the testing is so unreliable. And that's a real problem. So since the test is not relevant, it's really important to skip the test, because all the test does is throw you off. But now, what are doctors told? What are they told they should do? First of all, don't test anyone who's not sick, right? Because the test is going to be unreliable positive. Only test the people who are sick. And what do you do when you test someone who's sick and they turn up positive? Why? Then you convince them to take some very expensive medications and very dangerous medications, I might add, for a very long period of time. And the people who have Lyme, who are they? They are people who live in modern homes that are built in suburban wooded areas. What does that mean? That means they're wealthy. That means they're upper middle class. It means they likely have the insurance / money to embark on this very expensive therapy. So let's see what Lyme disease is and how we got into this murky mess in the first place. Lyme disease was first recognized in 1975. So researchers investigating why a lot of people, namely children, were being diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, especially in Lyme, Connecticut, and two neighboring towns. Now, the thing to understand, the thing that really got me was I said, well, okay, it's a positive problem with children's, children is someone under 18 or under 16. That definition varies, but that's okay. So when does this show up? Answer, it shows up at 6 months of age. So children with Lyme disease are diagnosed at the age of 6 months, between 6 months and 15. That's where the peak diagnosis is. I said, wait a minute. What happens at 6 months? At 6 months, you get your third set of vaccines. That's what happens at 6 months. And that is when Lyme disease is diagnosed in children. Now, just for getting everyone on the same page here, signs and symptoms of Lyme disease are red expanding rash, tiredness, chills, fever, headache, muscle and joint aches, and swollen lymph nodes. That's close enough for a start. That's according to the American Academy of Family Practice. There's a lot more symptoms, but let's start with those. So what happened then is we have a group of kids who are demographically similar financial background, similar culturally, and they're all getting this disease at about the same time. Obviously, it's because of a cultural practice. So there's a cultural practice going on here that's causing these kids to be dreadfully, dreadfully ill. Now, the other thing that's happening is we have Lyme disease being blamed for childhood arthritis. Okay, sounds good. Okay. But wait a minute, why is Lyme disease also causing a similar condition in adults? So it can't be that being a child is not the reason. It's not childhood illness that people outgrow. And dreadfully so, people actually go on to have this problem for a lifetime. They can get things like Bell's palsy, pain and swelling in the large joints like the knees, and just really go downhill. So this is my hypothesis as to what happened. New vaccines were introduced in the late 70s, most notably the hepatitis B vaccine and MMR vaccines. And so these children were getting these illnesses. A scapegoat was needed. The parents were very upset because, first of all, the juvenile rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis was a diagnosis that indicated their child had an autoimmune disease, that their child was defective, and that their child's body was damaging and destroying itself. In other words, your kid's an idiot. And these parents, the reason why they live in suburbs, the reason why they work so hard to earn so much money, is they want their child to have advantages of finding things in life. And they did not appreciate being told that their child was a worthless piece of protoplasm that would never amount to anything because he was genetically defective. That wasn't going to fly, and they were not happy. And the therapy for rheumatoid arthritis, obviously, of course, was not working. So Dr. Bergdorfi to the rescue. He identified the spirochete, and then the public relations guys stepped in, and they took it from there. They took it from there, man. They marketed the heck out of that Borrelia burgdorferi, and they got everyone really excited about it. Now, when I was at Harvard as an undergraduate, and I really wanted to get a medical school, I figured, well, I better mosey on over to medical school, listen to a lecture, so I can write a better essay on how to get into medical school or on why I want to be a doctor. So I happened to stumble into this lecture. This guy was lecturing about this Lyme disease. It made no sense to me whatever at all at the time, but it helped me write a very good essay, and I got admitted to many medical schools. In medical school, Lyme disease was absolutely not even mentioned, really. And then when I ended up on the Indian reservation, here I was on the Indian reservation, middle of Wisconsin, nothing but ticks everywhere. Honestly, God, I must have pulled off at least 10 ticks, brushed off another 10. I asked my husband, because he's an outdoorsy kind of guy. I said, honey, how many times have you been bit by a tick? He says, about 40. I said, he hasn't got Lyme. I don't have Lyme disease either. And so then I said, and then, of course, while I was in practice, I treated people with antibiotics. I mean, diligently. Oh, Lyme bite? Here, boom, antibiotics. And, you know, I couldn't say that it made a difference. It did not make a difference. And most people did not get any better or worse. So there really wasn't anything, because we treated them very early. The Lyme rash, we almost never saw. And so the question is, then what? So you have these kids, epidemiologically, the spirochete link absolutely does not hold up, and that's not good. So let's look for another link, because we got a few of them here. It turns out that there are a lot of drugs that can cause a Lyme-type syndrome. What might they be? Answer, vaccines, the measles vaccines, MMR. That's usually given around 18 months, but there's a hepatitis B vaccine given once at birth, again at 2 months. I'm sorry, again at 2, 4, and 6 months. So hepatitis B recombivax is a huge possible culprit. It's even listed as a side effect if you get out your hepatitis B recombivax literature. And Yardasil is now being given to little girls in big numbers. The problem with this, a huge problem, is Yardasil gives you actually more than a 1% frequency of arthritis-like, basically Lyme symptoms. Similarly, for hepatitis B and the Recombivax. So there's two different hepatitis B vaccines, and both of them are associated with this arthritis-type syndrome. And this right here totally explains, totally, more than explains, one, the Lyme epidemic and arthritis in children, and two, why is it now popping up in places where there are no deer, where there are no deer tick, and where there is no Lyme organism? And why is there a test that makes no attempt whatever to identify the organism? None. None. I mean, would you let someone tell you you had gonorrhea and they couldn't even show you a gonorrhea bacterium in your body? Would you let someone tell you you have syphilis and they can't even point out in the microscope where is that syphilis little organism wiggling around? Probably not. Well, you shouldn't let anyone tag you with some kind of Lyme diagnosis under such, you know, flimsy circumstances. So those are vaccines. But let's go on to try and figure out why is it that adults might be getting Lyme. Antibiotics, namely Cipro, causes Lyme disease. Augmentin, a type of penicillin, causes Lyme-type syndrome. And Augmentin is an antibiotic frequently given to children for ear infections. Who's likely to get Augmentin? It's a very expensive antibiotic, by the way. Middle-class individuals living in the suburbs who have good insurance. That's who's going to get it. And then Accutane causes a Lyme-type syndrome. Who's going to get Accutane at several hundred dollars a month? You got it. Middle-class, upper-middle-class person living in the suburbs who's concerned about their acne, and the parents have good insurance, or forget the insurance. They're willing to pay cash to help their child have a clear face. And then steroids, inhaled steroids. If you have asthma, you got it. Inhaled steroids, you got nice arthritis syndrome. Then get this one, hormone replacement. Yes, Premarin, hormone replacement causes a Lyme type of arthritis. And maybe you have a digestion, Protonix, the acid pump inhibitor. So if you're taking the aspirin a day and you get a little irritated in your stomach and the doctor decides to give you a proton pump inhibitor, guess what? You're on your way to getting a syndrome of symptoms that will be diagnosed likely as Lyme disease. And don't even get depressed because Paxil, Celexa, and Lyrica cause a Lyme-type syndrome. And osteoporosis, you think you want to prevent osteoporosis and get Lyme disease instead, right? So Fosamax, Boniva, Ultram, which is a pain pill for osteoarthritis, and Celebrex. Celebrex causes 6% of folks who take Celebrex, supposedly an arthritis pill, are going to develop an arthritis-type syndrome. Glaucoma medicines for your eye, you put those eye drops in your eye, 5% of people who take Travatan, a glaucoma medicine, are going to get an arthritis-type syndrome, likely to be diagnosed as Lyme. And thin your blood, try some Plavix. 6% of people who faithfully take their Plavix will develop a Lyme-type syndrome. And maybe you want to lower your cholesterol. Lipitor, Mevacor, Zocor, Vitorin, all of them cause an arthritis-type syndrome that mimics Lyme disease. Lipitor causes this in 11% of people. And maybe you want to treat your hypertension. Atacan, Hyzar, Prednisone, Captopril, Cozar, all these are arthritis medicines, and all of them cause a mysterious arthritis-type syndrome that mimics Lyme disease. So what's really going on here is we have a plague, we sure do, but what's the plague? The plague is that we're injecting our children with chemicals that cause a juvenile rheumatoid arthritis-type syndrome. The plague is that American adults are taking hypertensive medicines, cholesterol-lowering medications, blood thinners, glaucoma medications, osteoporosis prevention medications, depression medications, indigestion medicines, hormone replacement, steroids, acne antibiotic medications that cause a Lyme-type syndrome. Well, duh, no wonder so many people have Lyme. No wonder it occurs in odd places where there's no deer to be found and no deer tick and no spirochete. No wonder the test that detects it has nothing to do whatever with Lyme. It has to not be related to it. Why? Because Lyme disease is one big cover-up. It is a cover-up for the side effects of all these medications, to get people to keep taking these medications. And at the same time, ha-ha, hearty ha-ha, as my second cousin would say, get them to demand even more dangerous medications like long-term antibiotics, which are, of course, related to cancer, related to the more arthritis in Lyme, and extreme debilitating symptoms, and, of course, candida. So by getting explanation for their vague symptoms, an explanation like Lyme, it keeps them from looking further. It keeps them from identifying the true culprit. Now, of course, I was busy at work in the 90s when the Lyme epidemic started really taking off. And so in 1994, people started showing up in my office. And they said, Doc, I think I have Lyme disease. Ah, da, 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 da. And I was a young doctor back then. I was fresh out of medical school. Well, maybe not fresh, but pretty fresh. It's a few years. And I remember everything I'd heard about medical school, about these antibiotic tests and these infectious diseases and da, 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 da. And I said, you know what? Those tests are very expensive. They're very hard to order, very long time to get the results back. Why don't we just do the best we can for you? And, of course, at that time, by the time people started showing up in my office, I was totally disillusioned with drugs as a way of coping really with anything. And so these ladies, and actually they're all ladies, not one male, gave the same story. The story was this. I don't know what happened. I started just getting sick. And, you know, here I am. But if you back the story up a little more and say, well, when did you really stop feeling perfectly healthy? And it goes like this. I was feeling great. I had a urinary tract infection. I took an antibiotic. And 4 weeks after the antibiotic, everything started falling apart. So that's one story. Another story I heard was, well, you know, I use the diaphragm as a form of birth control, as this lady said. And she, you know, you put all that goo in there, that spermicide, which is chemical agent, and she left the diaphragm in for a very long time. Let's just say it was several weeks. And then she started getting aches and pains, and they started creeping up and just going every place and all over her body. And she reached a point where she could no longer go up the stairs to carry the laundry back and forth to do the laundry. And all these ladies had husbands who worked and earned a fair amount of money, and they had excellent insurance. Of course, I didn't take insurance back then, but I was trying to tell you the profile of these people. So they had access to a lot of medication, and these medications had literally destroyed their lives. And so but these people, if they had ever focused on the drug as the cause of their medication, of their affliction, then that would be devastating to not only an industry, but really to a whole social structure. And so what did I do for these people? Well, first I said, let's just start at the beginning. Why don't we start? Everyone knows where I start, right? Drinking water. Forget I'm all drink water. And believe it or not, the symptoms improve dramatically with drinking water. But I have to use the word improve, right? Not enough to, you know, nothing to write home. Well, maybe to write a postcard, not enough to write a letter about. They did get a little better. I said, okay, we're on the right track. So then we took the diet, cleaned up the diet, really went whole hog in it. In the 90s, you really could eat organic, and you could get cleaner, better food. And so I told them, look, guys, this is it, 100% organic. It's not organic. You don't eat it. Very simple. These ladies were already skinny as it was, so you know, they really had to eat, I mean, look for food and eat organic food. And then they got more measured looks improved. But then they were about 60% better, which is pretty good. Then I started them on enemas. Okay, now we got to 80% better, which is really good. So now we got them off the couch. A little bit of functioning off the couch, but still uncomfortable, still pain. And then went ahead and, believe it or not, used turpentine. Oh, my God. They cleared up. That was it. They got turpentine, and they were ecstatic. That wasn't quite the end of the story. So they had turpentine. It felt really good, but they would get just little awareness that maybe they were a little sick, a little awareness. So then they had to go on to do a juice fast or a water fast. Usually I do a water fast because it's easier. They get some calories and they just, skinny people. And they, I had follow-up on these ladies for 9 years. So 9-year follow-up, no recurrence. And that's an amazing thing. Now, when I was in practice, I was so cynical that I didn't see any point in even testing, because the tests were just so unreliable. And so I realize now that the tests are still unreliable. There is no difference there. And this has been just an incredible, incredible hard sell. Oh, by the way, I have to identify my station. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. We're ready to take some questions. If there are no questions, I'll continue to talk. But if there are questions, I will take them. So it was a very hard sell to sell people on the concept of Lyme, because people were looking for answers. They were really looking for answers. They knew it had to be something. And there are lots of ticks out there. There's a wood tick, the dog tick, and, of course, there's a deer tick. Couldn't blame it on the wood tick. Why? Because the wood ticks are in wood piles. People are not going to stop burning wood. They couldn't blame it on the dog tick. Why? People were not going to ditch man's best friend, their dog. Then we had an issue of you had to pin it on people who had the ability to let go of a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. And you had to pin it on the upper middle class. The reason you had to pin it on them was because they could afford, number one, to pay big bucks, like antibiotics at $100 a week for 5 years. They could afford it. They could dig that deep. That's one reason. But the other reason is if these upper middle class people ever realized the real cause of Lyme, they could bring down the whole system. They could literally bring down the whole system. So they had to be neutralized. They had to be diverted. And this was done beautifully, especially in the case of stalking Dr. Spear. You can even Google that on the Internet. It's incredible. I mean, you can't even write soap opera third in this stuff. So in stalking Dr. Spear, these people, upper middle class people, had identified antibiotics as their salvation, and they put all their energy towards persecuting a doctor who was against the prescription of antibiotics. And then they spent a lot of money, millions of dollars, doing their own research to validate the use of antibiotics. And so they then took these people who were suffering mightily from the pharmaceutical drugs and their side effects and got them to divert all their energy towards requesting a particular type and very expensive type of antibiotic of drug that would guaranteed make them worse. And we know antibiotics kill 63,000 Americans per year. I don't even need to break that down for you. 63,000 people a year at murders. How can it save anyone by taking it for 2 years? There must be something else, and of course there is something else. It's the underlying cause, which is the other drugs that people are taking. So let's take a look. I think we have a question here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Tim Leahy, and I'm a botanist, and I know quite a bit about Lyme disease. I've treated clients for the past 6 years with Lyme disease, and what I've had a great deal of success with no complaints by using Venus flytrap extract, and I sent them this product, and their Lyme disease within a matter of hours or weeks or minutes has gone away.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Now, the important thing this person mentioned was you did not use antibiotics. So you cannot cure a toxic condition by adding more toxins. We have another caller here. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering how they were able to pull the wool over people's eyes, because I think they narrowed it down to only one tick that caused Lyme disease, one type. There, you know, I guess there are hundreds of types of ticks. I was wondering how they were able to narrow it down to one, or why they wanted to narrow it down to one. I wonder what the story behind that is.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll answer that. They were looking for something. They needed something to blame this epidemic of aches and pains on. They had to blame it on something. Because if they didn't give people something to attach the blame to, people would look on their own, and they might find the truth. And that would have been, like I said, absolutely devastating for people in 1970-something who discovered the truth that all these pharmaceutical agents were poisoning them and destroying their lives. First of all, you could never have gotten a coalition together for any type of national health insurance. You never could have got people to even pay for insurance. The whole thing would have crumbled because the whole coalition of building the health industry was very delicate. So this guy, Dr. Bergdorf, was doing research on ticks and found this parasite in the belly of a tick. Wow, that was great. And they said, that's it, that's it, that's what we need, this tick will do. This tick is in wooded areas, it's near these homes where these people live, we can convince them of that. Good. So then they got all these ticks, and they said, wait. We have to make this very specific, like just one tick. Because you can't, if you incriminate the dog tick, then you're telling people they have to murder their dog. And that was not going to be an easy sell in the 70s. People now in 2014 might be willing to go for that, but they were not nowhere near back then. Then there's the wood tick. Well, the wood tick hangs out on wood. And if they tried to pick the wood tick, that would never work. Why? Too many people in the United States spend too much time around wood, and they don't have arthritis. Same with the dog. Too many people spend too much time around dogs, and they don't have arthritis. So you pick the deer tick. Most Americans do not have continual exposure to deer. So you couldn't get a large number of folks to come forward saying, I sleep with my deer all the time and I don't have Lyme. So it would be more difficult for people to refute this based on their own personal observation or experience. So you had to pick a tick or something people had no personal direct visual observation of, because that direct visual observation or experience of it would contradict the theory. And so you need to pick a theory that comprised components that were not within the experience of 99% of Americans. Even deer hunters only hunt deer in deer season. Most deer hunters don't, sleep with deer and curl up next to them. And so it's tough to find people who've been bitten by a lot of ticks. Like personally, like I said, I've been bitten by 20 ticks. And then my husband, who's an outdoors person, hunts deer, all kinds of stuff, he's only been bitten by 40 ticks. So it's tough to find people who've been bitten by enough ticks to realize, hey, wait, this is bogus. I haven't bitten by ticks. I don't have any problem. And then if you pick only one type of tick, you can always say to the person, well, you were bitten by the wrong tick, not the right kind of tick. And so now what's happening is the story is beginning to unravel. And so people are saying, I've got my Lyme test, my Lyme test is positive, I've been treated with the antibiotics, I'm still not any better, I don't feel like it's made any difference, there must be something else going on. So I was like, wait. So now they've identified another tick that gives symptoms just like Lyme disease, but all the Lyme disease tests are negative. And so now they've tried out this new tick that causes relapsing fever. And I'm not sure how long that's going to go for or how long that's going to work out, but that's the latest thing that they're trotting out now. And so each time you have a failed situation, like with the juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, the kids were not getting better, the prognosis was poor, the parents were unhappy with this pejorative label of my kid is defective. So, okay, fine. Let's find another label for your kid. We'll say he has Lyme. Okay, I'm happy with Lyme. Now I can have another wider range of therapies, and I'm going to use those range of therapies, and my kid's not the problem. The Lyme disease is the problem, and parents were happy, and you can make more progress with that. And so now people are getting disillusioned because they're taking the antibiotics, they've got their diagnosis, and they're not getting better. So now we have a new theory they're putting forward This is the same. We're still treating the same thing, right? Aches and pains in people that are unexplained. So now they're saying, well, we've identified another tick, specified tick, which is now in areas where the old ticks didn't hang out, and we think that's causing disease. And, of course, the disease is causing, it's detectable by symptoms, but not by any tests. Now, if you can look under a microscope and see a syphilis spirochete, you should be able to look under a microscope and see a Burgdorferi borrelia spirochete, if indeed it's there. But, of course, it's not. We have another question. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I've been sick for 24 years and finally a few years ago got the Lyme diagnosis. I'm still really no better. What do you do to get better then? I've already cleaned up my house out of all the toxins. I don't use any toxic products. I've cleaned up my diet. I've done everything I know to do. The latest thing we're trying is low-dose naltrexone. I don't know what you feel about that. I don't know what to do, but just everything is not getting better.
Correct. Absolutely. And you're right. It's not going to. Not with that therapy. Okay, so I'll give you that answer off the air. Okay, so this person who called in is absolutely, totally mainstream Lyme. And, again, you cannot cure toxic chemical intoxication with another toxic chemical. So one can expect that naltrexone she's just started taking, low dose, which, by the way, is quite deadly. It's more deadly than heroin, just by the way, is not going to be much more effective than what anything else she's tried, because you're adding a chemical to a chemical-induced illness. Okay, so obviously the answer then would be to stop all the chemicals. The Candida Cleaner/Turpentine protocol takes you so far. What I found with these Lyme-type sufferers, with these mysterious aches and pains, is they need a protracted period of enemas and of a clean diet. And people who want more direction, more information, can send an email to support@vitalitycapsules.com. That's Gabriel. And she'll send you some information about working with me. Like I said, I can't work with everybody, but I can work with some people. So we'll see if we can help get you on the track to healing. Okay. We have some questions here in the chat room. I've heard from so many people how afraid they are of ticks, thinking they will get Lyme disease. Exactly. So the morbid fear that people have of ticks is a measure of how effective this propaganda campaign is. When I first came to Wisconsin, and you check out the maps, Wisconsin, man, it is blood red, covered with ticks everywhere. The red symbol means that lots of ticks and lots of Lyme. Okay, and other parts of the U.S. globe, or map rather, are yellow or white. Okay, so here I was in the most densely Lyme-infected area, and quite frankly, we didn't have a single person in the medical practice on the Indian reservation, even the white folks in town, so to speak. Nobody had Lyme. Well, then the word came down that our ticks were infested with Lyme, or some ticks were infested with Lyme. Well, then we had this strip search thing going on. Everyone had to, every night before you go to bed, strip up all your clothes and search your body head to toe and pull out all the ticks. You know, I got home from working all day long. I was just too darn tired. I'd just fall into bed asleep. I'd wake up and there'd be a tick, and I'd just flick it off. Now, people's fear of ticks, I'll just say, is just totally unfounded. There's absolutely no evidence that the ticks cause the disease, because the ticks supposedly harbor the Lyme spirochete. Got it? Let's say for a minute that's true. They transmit the spirochete to the human being. Let's say for a minute that that's true. And then, of course, these spirochete reproduce and spread to all the bones and tissues and cause problems. Let's just for a minute believe that. If that's the case, you should be able to get a piece of this person's blood, look under the dark field, and see some spirochete. But you can't. Why? Because they're not there. They're not there. So there's no evidence that the tick bite causes any of the problems. So I think that people's belief in this and people's extreme fear of these ticks is simply a measure of the total success of the propaganda campaign. For people to be deathly afraid of ticks and embrace the cholesterol medications and embrace the immunizations and embrace the blood pressure medications and embrace the blood thinning medications that cause the Lyme. I mean, this is not me making it up. This is, you know, let me just get my little book out here, tell you which one it's in. This is the PDR, Physician's Desk Reference, Edition 64. This is the year 2010, because they won't produce this after 2010. Why? They said they're not producing this because this book has information that creates too much liability. They didn't say to liability for who. I actually called them up, by the way, and asked them where was my 2012 and where is my 2013 edition, and they said there will not be one. Now, this is the PDR Guide to Drug Interactions, Side Effects, and Indications. These things are almost a collector's item. You can find them on Amazon for sure. But if you look up your condition, you will find it there, and you'll find all the drugs that cause it. Okay, so what is the bullseye rash? This is interesting, because I wondered, what's the bullseye rash? How is it that you can have this characteristic bullseye rash? And then if you look on the map, this is, again, the map tells everything. If you look on the map, where is Lyme disease? Who has Lyme disease? It's in New York City. Excuse me? Can I buy a vowel? Where are all the deer in New York City? Okay, Philadelphia. Where are the deer in the Philadelphia high-rise apartments? I want to know. And then Washington, D.C., same thing. At least you should have a blank spot where you have a concrete city with high-rises and no deer. I mean, you just can't make a case that downtown Philadelphia is in the middle of woods and has displaced is sharing space with a bunch of deer. I live in Philadelphia. I know. So the bullseye rash. I was very puzzled about this, and I want to know about it. I had no way of knowing. But as luck would have it, I risked my life, and I went back to the United States not too long ago. And I went to a place called Chicago. And in Chicago, I walked from – actually, I took a car from where I was staying to the hotel where the event was, internet learning thing, back and forth. So I was exposed to the air in Chicago. And darn it, at day six, didn't I get a bullseye rash? Well, I can simply tell you, sitting in a conference room in a hotel, there was absolutely no chance I was bit by a tick. It just wasn't. I look at this bullseye rash, I thought, I'll be darned, here it is. Now, I broke on a few other things, too. I said, man, I got to get out of here. But I think the bullseye rash comes from chemtrails. That's my guess. And if you look at the area where Lyme is very prevalent, there are, you know, it's around big cities. There's no big concentration of Lyme disease in rural areas that don't have a city. I mean, even in Wisconsin, there are quite a few big cities in Wisconsin, and each one is totally plagued by Lyme. And the areas in Wisconsin, there's a few of them, that don't have any Lyme diagnosed. They do it by county. And those areas are totally rural and not near big cities. And that epidemiology just does not match. It absolutely does not match the information that we're given. So if you look again and say, okay, fine, let's look at where people live who are exposed to chemtrails, who are exposed to or who have agreed to certain vaccines, who have agreed to arthritis medicines or preventative medicines of any kind. If you're taking hormone replacement, if you're taking medicines to prevent osteoporosis, then you are basically aiding and abetting your contraction of, I won't even call it Lyme disease, let's call it Lyme syndrome, because it's really, at this point, a list of symptoms. Okay, so we've got the bullseye rash. We have a question here. There's research concerning tumors subsequently developing at the site of a tick bite. Okay. There are tumors that develop at the site of really pretty much any animal bite. I won't say animal bite, but insect bite. And these things can happen. And my bet, dollars to donuts, that the tumor would be benign. So that's nothing to worry about. Okay, that is it for today. Lyme, hoax or plague? Answer is both. It's a hoax, and it's a plague. It's serious. It is no joke. people who like help and assistance with transitioning either off their medicines or out of their Lyme misery, they can send an email to support@vitalitycapsules.com, and we can look into that possibility. And next week, I don't have a topic for next week off my head, but it will be published. You will be getting the email. The Vitality Capsule sale is over. We're absolutely sold out. We're so sold out that many of you will actually be getting a refund of your payment because the capsule sold out quickly before we could even pull down the advertisement. Okay, well, thank you very much, and we will see you next week. Believe.